really hit home to me, and I know it may not hit home to some of you, but you know, one of the things I always, when people ask me about networking and direct sales and what I've been doing over the last 10 years, and a lot of times I talk about networking as is almost like it pays to have a psychology degree, because our business is really about people. It's really totally about working with people. And so, you know, it's how good we are working with people. And you don't need a psychology degree by any, you know, wildest imagination. But you do need skills. You need to work on your people skills, because they're so important, because our whole business is about building relationships with people, getting people to trust you in a relatively short period of time, you know, just establishing rapport with people, no matter whether it's in your prospecting efforts or in your building relationships with associates in your downline, and becoming a leader and motivator. It's in coaching people, it's in mentoring people, it's in just being advisory to people. All their relational, you know, relationships, relational activities, and it's crucial for us to be in a posture, in our best possible posture, of being the best we can be in those kind of relationships. We want to try to improve skills, any skills that are out there, to make us the best we can be. And in reading this article, it was really insightful to me, because there are some things about, you know, I mean, I'm not into grief counseling. I don't have the expertise that a lot of people out there do in these specific areas. So to me, it just opened some doors of methods that I could use in my business, because one of the things that we invariably come across in our businesses is people that have emotional trauma. And that can be caused by anything. It can be caused by divorce. It can be caused by death in the family. It can be caused by, especially in the health industry, about people diagnosed with incredible disease conditions. I mean, we're constantly being, you know, associated with people, and even sometimes in our own family, even sometimes ourselves, who come across these issues that really are a tremendous emotional drain on people. They're real, what we call downers on people. They're things that trigger some deep emotional feelings that are hard to just release. And so I just thought her article that this woman wrote, and it was in out of Network Marketing Times of, you know, a number of months back. Her name was Aurora Winter, and she's a grief counselor, and she wrote about how do we connect with those in emotional crisis, because, again, why do I need to do this? Because you're in a people business. When you call a prospect and something traumatic has just happened in their life, so many of us want to just exit, because it's our natural inclination. We sense that there's a crisis going on, and we tend to want to stay away from it. And most of the time, the reason why we want to exit is we're afraid we're going to say the wrong thing. It's kind of very much like when we're prospecting. A lot of people don't prospect because they're afraid they're not going to say the right things, and that's really silly, because you end up not prospecting at all. I mean, it's kind of like self-sabotage is what that is. In regard to working with people in emotional crisis, when we walk away from them, it's not a self-sabotage as much as it was a situation presented to us where we could have potentially made a difference, and we chose not to. So I look at it as, number one, all of us have issues in our life, no matter what those are, so it's good for us to learn how to deal with it and deal with other people who have issues. But most importantly, if your goal on the earth is to impact others' lives, then why are we stepping back from situations where we truly can have an impact? And the reason being, if you don't feel like you can have an impact, you don't know how to handle a situation, that's what this call is about, to give you some insight into how you can handle yourself in a situation where you're working with somebody in an emotional crisis. We also talked about network marketing, of course, being all about people. So if we can't learn how to motivate people and work with people at any level, then we're going to foreclose ourselves from having opportunities that are truly presented to us in many ways. Network marketing is also about building trust. In all relationships, about building trust, and it's about making commitments. And so, again, we want to build relationships. And the concept of us getting involved in people's lives. I'm doing a coaching class right now in one of my power trainings, and we talk about building balance. When you coach people, you can coach them. Sometimes this is why it hasn't worked for you in the past, where you might have thought you were coaching somebody in Manatech, but they didn't accomplish anything. And one of the problems is that you've isolated your coaching on just exclusively Manitech. When you isolate your coaching just on how to increase your GPV and pounding on people and accountability and GPV and all this, you're totally out of balance in that relationship with that person because you're not dealing with all the aspects of their life. You're not getting involved in other aspects of their life. So you're ignoring other aspects of their life that could be more important from time to time, that could be creating resistance in their Manitech business from time to time. And without dealing with them on a fuller or more balanced basis, you're going to lose that person because you're incapable of helping support them in having that balance in their life because you don't know enough about other aspects of their life, which is another reason why I love to set goals with people. When I start off a new person to Manitech, I don't want to just sit talk about Manitech goals. I want to talk about, let's look at your whole life, because truly this is a business about supporting people in their whole life, how to be the best they can be in every aspect, not just in Manitech. So these are just a basis, a foundation for why I think this topic is so crucial for us, is because we're dealing now with a specific situation where, you know, what if somebody's in emotional crisis? Why do I want to jump in and play ball with them? Because that's the role I need to play in people's lives. Because I want to love on people, I want to impact their lives, I want to build a relationship that will be long-lasting relationship. And so I'm not out there just selling Manitech products. I'm truly building long-lasting relationships. So in looking at dealing with and connecting with people in emotional crisis, Aurora kind of gets down to a three-step process for dealing with somebody in emotional crisis. So let's walk through and talk about those three steps. And, of course, the first step is listen without fixing. Well, listening, let's just, you know, again, highlight on that. Such a critical skill is listening skills. And, you know, there's a statistic out there that says less than 2% of us in this country have good listening, you know, skills. And that's a problem. I mean, it's a huge problem in our country. And that's why I keep, you know, reinforcing people to take listening classes, read books about listening, take my power training on listening skills, just to develop really some insight into how to be the best listener you possibly can, because we don't learn how to listen as we grow up. It's one of those things that we're not trained in. The only training we truly get are how our parents listen, because that's our environment, and we tend to adopt their listening habits. And if you grew up in my household, you'd be a terrible listener. In fact, it's really fun for me today because I've been through so much training in this area, and I've actually trained people as well and done trainings on it. But even this last weekend at Thanksgiving when my sister was in town, it was just fascinating for me to sit back and watch her behavioral patterns around listening. And, I mean, it was all those horrific patterns that I used to see in myself. Not that I'm a master listener at this stage of my life, because I'm consistently and constantly growing in the area, but I can see so much more than I ever did before, and it's almost like seeing myself 5 years or 10 years ago in my sister, and so you can see where they come from. It's humorous and sad at the same time that we pick up those bad habits from our parents and our environment. So anyway, so I had a blast watching that. So listening is just, you know, number one, you got to learn how to listen. But the listening that Aurora is talking about here is that great listening abilities, developing the skills in that, but also taking it on without trying to fix things. So many of us have a big F on our forehead for Mr. Fix-It or Mrs. Fix-It. We can't move forward without fixing things. In fact, some of you might have read the book, Robert Gray, I believe his name was, who wrote Men Are from Venus, Women from Mars. And if you read that book, you know that men have a much harder time with this than women do. Women tend to be better just listeners without any, because they know that sometimes people just want to be heard. Men always are feeling like, the only reason you're communicating, why would you waste communication with me unless you want me to fix it? And that's part of the frustration between men and women, especially in marriages where, you know, a woman can just have a bad day and her husband comes home and she wants to talk to him about it. And all he wants to do is try to fix it for her. And it's irritating as all get out, because all we want to do is just share and release the emotions around what impacted us that day. And in dealing with people in an emotional crisis, if you want to really develop the skill of listening without fixing, because the person truly is trying to just be heard. They need room for just working through their feelings. They need to be able to just work through those feelings, so they need you just to hear them instead of you trying to fix it, because you can't fix it. I mean, 90% of these times, you can't even come close. So what are you doing? You're meddling into other people's stuff, and you're making it almost, you're making something that's very deep and very much an issue, you're almost handling it in a superficial fashion. And they might take total offense. You don't want them to shut down. You want them to open up. The goal in dealing with people in emotional stress is to let them flow, because it's the release of all that emotion that allows them to start in the part of their healing process. When you get involved in a conversation with people around an emotional distress in their life and you come from solution to them, if you shut them down through that, you've now they keep it inside of them. So critical to open up the floodgates and allow them to freely express themselves. I remember a time, like when my kids moved in, my niece and nephew, and a lot of you know the story about my brother being shot and killed by his wife, and I took in his niece and my niece and nephew at 14 and 16 years old, which is a plenty of trauma for any, you know, human's entire lifetime, no less a 14 and 16 year old losing both their parents. And I just remember that my whole feel for this at the time was I just want to be as open with them as possible. So I talked about their dad all the time. It was kind of, you know, when I cooked dinner, I go, hey, what would Cliff do? That was my brother. You know, what would JD, you know, or I'd bring up something in his life. But I made it ever present for them, the openness about what, you know, this their dad and their mom. I made it a constant kind of conversation piece to make it easy so that they could feel a free flow. So again, listen without fixing is important, that you just hear them out, listen to people so that they can feel that they have a free-flowing conversation and they can find a source of comfort through that, to working through their feelings. Aurora, in her article, she wrote about a book called Kitchen Table Wisdom by Rachel Naomi Riemann. And in that book, she quoted her saying, our listening creates sanctuary for the homeless parts within the other person. And that was just kind of a neat quote. Our listening creates sanctuary for the homeless parts within the other person. So you're allowing them to open up and say some things that they can find some kind of relief through. And that's what you're doing by being a good listener without trying to fix. Some of us have a hard time doing that because we like to talk so much. You really got to bite your tongue and learn how to just sit back and be a great listener. And that's not, again, that starts with those working on listening skills. But stay away from the Mr. Fix-It status. Secondly, a second step in dealing with somebody emotional is acknowledging the situation. Go right at it. So a lot of us, when somebody has something bad happen to them, we clam up because we don't want to talk about it. Or we play an avoidance strategy. We try to make them feel better by talking about what a great day it is or other greatness. And, you know, it's almost like, because we learn that as we raise our children, that the best technique about when a child gets, you know, something bad happens in a child's life is to, you know, divert his attention to something else. Well, as you get to be an adult stage, that's the last thing you need to do is have all this diversion work going on, because you need to work through what that is, otherwise it'll just carry over into other areas of your life and it'll just become more deep-seated. So you want to help them work through, so you want to be able to acknowledge the situation. Don't hide from it, don't run from it, don't flee from it, but feel free to open up and discuss it, so acknowledging the situation. So, and if you're in a coaching relationship with somebody, let's say you're coaching somebody in Manatech and you really have the permission to coach them, give them feedback and that kind of stuff, when you sense in a coaching call that somebody is emotionally withdrawn, the most important thing you can do is dig at what is that, why are they withdrawn? Not flee from it or ignore it or just say, oh, she's having a bad day. Don't be dismissive of it. Rather, hit it head on and really go after it, to really dig at it, to talk about it. So they might say, well, and they get grumpy and say, and then you want, what you want to do is you want to open them up. So you would ask questions like, how did that make you feel? You know, you really want them to feel it. You want them to pull that out so that that's their mechanism of releasing it. Because if they just dismiss it and say, I don't want to talk about it, well, now you're stuck in a point where they're trying to hide it and they're trying to keep it inside. So important that you're open, you acknowledge the situation, you work with them, and you talk them through it. So that they can just, and not even you talk them through it, but they talk themselves through it. So don't flee, acknowledge the situation. And then the third step is giving the person hope. And everybody needs hope in this world. I mean, we really don't want people staying in despair. But especially those who are going through emotional trauma, they sometimes see no hope. They sometimes, you know, emotional trauma for us can cause us to see that there's no future. My two kids did that, my niece and nephew. I mean, when they had this devastating thing happen in their life, it was like they didn't see a future. It was like their whole world came to an end. It was like being robbed of their life. Because as you know it, we're children, your life is your parents. You're not seeing that you have, you know, your greatest part of your life could be without those parents. And these poor kids at 14, 16 had no parents left. I mean, you know, in effect, one was in prison, one was dead, and you sit there and you just talk about despair. They're sitting in a position of no hope. So, you know, this kind of despair robs you, and it robs you of energy, it robs you of spirit. I'm going to suggest today, I developed, was the despair I see in our world with people that have no hope when it comes to their financial status. They're just totally drained. They're wiped out. They see no remedy. There's not a light at the end of the tunnel. It's dark. It's just dark. And to live in that darkness is paralyzing. And it creates a downward spiral. So our goal in working with people in emotional distress, no matter what the premise is for that emotional stress is and despair is to try to bring into their life new hope, that to show them that there's hope. There's always hope. And, of course, for those of us, you know, I put in there a list of ways to overcome this. How do I bring hope into people's lives? And Aurora had different ideas in her article. My number one thing, whenever I think of the word hope, I always, because of my Christian beliefs, you know, I always believe God's my source of all hope. I mean, He is my future. He is my today. He's my tomorrow. He's my forever. And it's so for us as Christians, when we work with people, there's a lot of counseling that can happen around, you know, finding out if the person's a believer and sharing the hope you have in Christ. And you know, Romans 8:28 is one of my favorite verses that I love to share with people, because I really believe that no matter what crisis it is, there's always greatness in everything. It's about, you know, how do I take and find everything that happens? His way is not our way, but there's always good. And even when my brother was shot and killed, it was hard for me to say Romans 8:28, because there'd be goodness in this, you know, oh my gosh, you know, and it was just, but there's always hope. And, you know, at the time when that happened, I went into self-pity and anger and all the things that we go through in our times of despair, but there's always something to take you beyond that. And my hope was my hope for a greater future for these children, and I had incredible. And I needed to bring that hope for them and allow them to open up and see the great hope that they had for an incredible future. It's different than what they ever thought. Neither of them ever believed they would be raised in the state of Texas. I mean, they're out in California in Mammoth Lakes in a beautiful place, but now all of a sudden they found themselves in Texas. So a different setting, a different environment, different parenting, everything changed in their life. But there was always a sense of hope for them. And it was, thank goodness, these kids were strong Christian kids too, because that was a beautiful tool for me to work with them on, is what God had as a purpose in their life, that God's got an incredible purpose in our lives. And it doesn't matter what transpires in the secular world, He's got an incredible purpose for us in a direction as we're here to play out and fulfill that. And hardship and adversity are going to come in our path. Another way to help people bring hope in their lives is that knowing you're not the only one, and, you know, making sure that, you know, there's some kind of reflection there that other people have, you know, similar issues. You know, we You know, death is something that happens to all of us. Now, that's not a way, making that statement to somebody who just, you know, had a loved one pass away is not a great thing to say. But the concept that there is life beyond this is absolutely true. And so, but working with the people to know that they're not the only one in a situation is impactful too, that they don't feel like they're isolated and they're the only ones. It's crucial to believe that you have camaraderie. I mean, it's kind of like an inbuilt support group, that there's camaraderie in numbers and that we can find, and that's why we have support groups out there, is that you can find some true consolation and solace from others who are going through similar things that you're going through. Other ways of telling is sharing other stories of people who had similar experiences, who triumphed over them, you know, and they came, you know, really created incredible things out of their lives after having such emotional distress in their lives. Physical contact is another thing she highly suggests, and just, you know, holding somebody's hand. You don't have to get real physical with the person. I mean, hugging sometimes, some of you are huggers and some are not. I happen to be a big hugger. I just love, you know, physical contact with people. It's just a connectiveness. It's part of who I am, but some people are not. But grabbing somebody's hand and holding their hand as you're talking to them or they're sharing with you is a great way to just, you know, bring closeness to that communication. And as you share other stories of hope that people have had with similar conditions, similar issues, you know, that's a great way of communicating. It's because you add that touch, you add that extra sensitivity in a relationship, which is not just oral communication, eye contact, tenderness of voice, all these things that we can do. We can also physically touch another person. And I kind of just looked at all of this as just loving on people, you know, really just loving on people. And that's what we need to do. We need to be there for them, be that sounding board, be great listeners, you know, help them, you know, acknowledge the situation, be in the situation with them. In other words, don't let them flee from it, run from it, really acknowledge it, honor them for what they are going through, but support them in bringing hope and reestablishing hope in their lives. And those are the three steps that she brings out. Aurora goes further in the article just to share with us some of the biggest mistakes we make. And boy, you know, I can see myself falling into this trap in some of these, and we'll go through them. There's seven things that she said that are our most common mistakes we make when we work with people under emotional stress or emotional crisis. One of them is that we go into problem-solving mode. Again, probably pour that fix-it kind of stuff. Like if you're working with somebody who's getting divorced or who's gone through death or something like that, and we say things like, oh, you're so young, you'll find somebody else. You know, and that typically isn't something that's going to really make their day, because, you know, that doesn't fix a broken heart. I mean, it's something you might talk to somebody about 3 months after it's happened, but it's not something you deal with on the day or within the week of having that incredible crisis in somebody's life, because it's very aloof, it's very detached, it's not grappling with what their current state of their emotional state is. So again, you don't have to go into problem solving. All you need to do is be a great listener. So stay out of that problem solving mode and making those things. And I suspect in my life I've used some of this language because you think it's helpful to give them a concept of they have a future, but it's at the stages when it first happens to them, they really need to just emote, and you need to be a great listener with them. Second thing is don't assume. I know this happens a lot too, because each of us have been through our own emotional crises. So when people say something and they go, oh my gosh, it's happening, and you go, I know exactly how you feel. When you say that to somebody in a state of emotional crisis, you somehow minimized what they're feeling, and it's the assumption can totally shut down their willingness to communicate with you, and that's the last result you want. Because remember, the whole concept here is to have open communication and open flow. You want them to feel very free to describe what's going on and to let their emotions flow, because that's how they get through it, is by open, honest, authentic communication. So more important than saying, I know exactly how you feel, even if you think you do, is to use language like, I can't imagine what you're going through. And see, what that does is it opens the door, because then they feel like they want to share with you what they're going through. They feel an open door that you're wanting to hear them. And so it's more an opportunity for them to be expressive. So choose that language over, I know how you feel. So again, people, if you get what's going on here, it's all about taking the focus off of you and putting the focus on the other person. It's not about how many times you might have gone through the similar thing or all this kind of stuff. That's not what's important here. What's important here is that you meet the person where they are and you let this work through it, to emote and to work through it, and you're there to support them in doing that. Another thing that we tend to do is we compare, and that's another terrible mistake we make. We compare it. So somebody says, you know, they go, oh, my gosh, my husband just walked out on me last night. And you go, oh, you know what, my I've had two husbands do that to me too. It's like you just shut the person down. You came in as an expert around husbands walking out. Well, even if you are an expert in it, that's the last thing the person needs to know. At that point, when they first share with you, they need you just to go, oh, my gosh, what are you going through? I can't imagine what you feel like. And you let them just expose themselves, just experience it, just feel with it, go with the flow, you know, just be with. Again, a great listener. Let them just walk through it. Let them, you know, so don't get into comparisons, because everybody has experiences that you can compare with. When somebody tells me about trauma in their life, my first thing out of my mouth is, oh, I know exactly how you feel because my brother was shot and killed by his wife. I don't bring up the most traumatic time in my life. How does that help that person? It doesn't help that person at all. I can help that person by going back to feeling that experience I had so I can feel with that person. But doing a comparative analysis is just shuts them down. Another thing is just trivializing. Don't minimize somebody's experience, because you trivialize what they're going through or their situation. So when you say things like, and I've done this, I know that. When people say something about it, I go, understand, it just takes time. And the reason this is bad language, I never thought about it, but as Aurora said in the article, she said, people have waited for light years with the thought in mind that it's just going to take time. You're setting them up for failure. Using that terminology sets people up for failure. Because how many people do you know who are still suffering from an emotional crisis today that happened 20 years ago? And they're still suffering. And along the path, five other people had told them, you know, this is just going to take time. So they've now built that into their paradigm, into their belief system. So they're prolonging because somebody told them it's going to take time. So let's make sure it takes time, because that's what it's supposed to take. And they're hanging on and lingering in some of their emotional crisis because somebody told them it's going to take time. Wow. The power of suggestion, the power of what you're saying here. So using that terminology really can extend the period of pain and agony people go through instead of being a supportive comment. So you want to accelerate their trip from loss to wholeness. You don't want to extend it. You want to draw it closer. If you want to make suggestions to them, suggest they get some help or get some support or enter a support group or do different things that can help work them, have them work through it, versus stay stuck, which is the concept that takes time. That means you're going to be stuck for a long time. How long that is, who knows? Most of the time when you make that comment, you leave it open-ended, so it becomes open-ended for them. Interesting experience around that. I never looked at it that way, but I thought this was really insightful about using the terminology, it just takes time. So that's minimizing it. The other aspect of it is don't maximize it. So a lot of times when people come to you and they say, oh, I just lost my husband. Well, somebody says, I just lost my husband. You know, he passed away last night. He had a heart attack. Or you look about this family over the weekend. How about Joe Kennedy? Some of you might be familiar. A 28-year-old baseball player died at his home. They don't have any clue why. He left a wife and a little son. Now, the worst thing you can do with that woman when she calls you, if you're a friend or associate in your downline or somebody that you're working with or whatever, is to go, oh, my gosh, did you guys have a will? You know, I mean, why bring those issues up? You see how you start augmenting and maximizing the problems by bringing up additional issues. You stay away from those because you don't want to increase the issues that's going through this poor lady's head. I can tell you when my brother passed away, my whole head was in a flurry of all the issues around it. No will, da-da-da-da, what do we do with this real estate, what do we do with this, what do we do with this, what do we do with this? I mean, they're just like the kids, how do you handle the kid? You know, you get the maximum issues are already floating. You don't need somebody else to pour them on. You need to be there just to support the person, help support them. When they come up with the issues, say, wow, yeah, we can tackle that. Yeah, we can take care of that. We can tackle that. You can support them, but you don't have to add issues, add flames to the fire or put gasoline on the fire to make them feel worse or to bring up additional responsibilities. Like when somebody passes away and you talk to this woman, again, I use this as an example, you know, and just say, oh, my gosh, you're going to be a single parent now raising your son all by yourself. I got some good books that I'd like you to read. You know, yikes, 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 yikes. Poor woman's already got enough grief. She just lost her husband. You know, let's work through that grief first before we start augmenting the amount of additional responsibilities that that are going to arise because of what's transpired. don't be inauthentic. In other words, and this was a great one too, because the first thing typically out of our mouths when somebody has some emotional crisis in their life is we say, I'm sorry. And I'm sorry is probably one of the most abused phrases in the history of mankind. I'm sorry is about being apologetic. But it tends to be in our vocabulary, in our nature, in our country, it tends to be one of those things that we say as an automatic response instead of true, authentic communication in a situation. We use it as an automatic response. But by saying I'm sorry, it typically, when you say I'm sorry to somebody, it typically will shut down communication. What you really want to do is just say, you know, something that you feel. Be authentic with your feeling. When somebody tells me something dramatic has happened in their lives, sometimes it's important for you to say, wow, I really don't even know what to say. And open that door because you're stuck in a situation. Be authentic. Be exactly authentic instead of, I'm sorry. And things that really are not an honest portrayal of what's happening. You feel badly that this person is lost or this person's going through something. But you really are kind of stuck in a quandary of, I really don't even know what to say. And you hug the person. You know, open that authenticity up through a way that's an authentic mechanism instead of superficial. So stay away from superficial communication. And we tend to get trapped into it. And just show our compassion with the person. That's what we need to be doing. So be authentic. And then the last suggestion she says in terms of mistakes we make is we interrogate people. And we want to stay away from interrogation. So we can ask questions like, you know, some factual questions. For instance, like, what happened? Or how can I help? Or what did the doctor say? That small, factual, simple, direct questions are asked about facts. You can ask those kind of things, you know, encourage the other person to share openly, again, because you want them to express and to talk and to be authentic in their communication, to really feel through it. But follow their responses, you know, follow their leads. Don't interrogate them. Don't get into interrogation about how they're feeling, what's going on, what they did. You don't want to get into interrogation in a normal setting. That's going to be totally inappropriate. But to have them walk through some of the facts again with you is okay because that allows them to start, you know, exhibiting their feelings through that. They get to walk through it. But again, interrogation is bad. We don't want to interrogate. Well, what are you going to do about it? Well, what are you going to change? What are you going to do? What's your next step? That's interrogation. Stay away from that kind of nonsense. And always come to them without an agenda. Go to people with emotional crisis. Don't have an agenda. Your agenda will be so clear to them when you start working from an agenda. And too many times we do that. So it's just really about just loving on somebody and being there to have a sounding board for them. And then making suggestions in the right direction. Not it's going to take time, but you know, maybe suggest that they look at counseling or some support system, support service that could help them, or prayer partners or whatever that's going to look like to really support them in walking through that, but not something that is going to extend the process for them. Okay, all right, great. That's all I have on the call today. It says, and I guess I close it off with, that's how to respond effectively, avoid miscommunication, make lifelong friends. And, of course, that is the nature of our business. That's what we do. So feel more empowered. Okay, how many of you guys on the call feel a little bit more empowered to tackle some of these issues? Did you guys pick up anything and learn anything from this talk like I did when I read the article? Anyone feel like this helped?
That was tremendous, Mary Jo.
Great, great. So yeah, you know, sometimes when I read articles, it hits me in the heart. I go, I hope other people can get this too and really, you know, feel a flavor for it. Because
I want more.
You want more? Well, go back to school and learn how to be a grief counselor. And I know. It's so much fun to step into people's lives and to just be a support system for them. We really need tools to be able to do that. And I think some of us think we naturally know how to do that, but we don't. Our natural inclinations tend to be things that really can shut people down instead of open people up. And like mine were, I looked at some of the terminology I used and I said, wow, I haven't been opening people up. I've been coming from inauthentic. Even as authentic as I think I am as a person, some of that phraseology is stuff that I would use. And I like this language better. I think it's just it's more heart rendering, and it allows them to stay, you know, in the open, authentic realm. Yeah, great, great, great. Well, good.
Hey,
anyone
Mary
else? Bob. Anyone see any aspects of applications?
Can you hear me? This is Bob.
Hi, Rob. Yeah, Bob. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was involved for several years with a prison ministry, and one of their mottos that they had was listen, listen, love, love.
Great.
You know, if you just do that, you know, plus the reinforcement you gave us today, I think that we're going in the right direction.
Great, 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 great. Thanks, Bob. Yeah, it's great.
Well,
yeah, listen, listen, love, love. I love it. The four L's. Listen, listen, love, love. Yeah.
You've given us tools to where we can go to someone who's just had a death in the family, or and up until now, yeah, I can go and hold their hand. But I never knew what to say because it always seemed to make it worse. So then, like you said, you don't say anything because you're afraid you'll say the wrong thing.
Yep.
You've given us some tools, and I really appreciate it.
You bet. Great. Great, great, great. Yeah, and releasing the fear around just the acknowledgement of what's happened in people's lives. I think we fear talking about it sometimes because we think we're going to offend them or we'll say the wrong thing, when in fact we need to acknowledge away from what's happened in their life. They won't, you know, we don't play evasion tactics. We acknowledge it and work through their feelings with them. Yeah, great. Well, good, good. Well, you guys, great, great Monday. Anyone else have any other questions? We're just about done with the call. Can I help anyone else in anything else?
Yes. When are we going to start training on the ICANN?
Oh, you can't wait, can you?
No.
I know, me too. And let me just give you an update on what's going on with that so we can update everybody. I did the video recording last week for the DVD,
wow.
And I got the copy of it yesterday and viewed it. And I'm going to tell you, people, it wasn't what I deem perfect. And I'm not happy unless I really have a tool for you that I believe is going to work with. You know, I mean, it was good, but it wasn't great. And I'm just not going to settle for that. So I'm really, I said to Lydia this morning, I said, you know, Lydia, I'm just not willing to put it out there just because I want it out there by December 1st. I really want to have something great. So we're already in the midst of replanning a new video recording, and we're going to get that done this week on that. We have some of the flip chart done. We have a lot of the other materials that are ready to go for duplication. But, again, the DVD is such a major piece of the puzzle because it's part of everybody's starter kit. It's a way to share with other people on how they can, too. And so we're really putting our energies back in that direction to re-videotape that, get the, you know, we have PowerPoints. We have a couple of PowerPoints already done and ready to go. But that's a major cog in this whole package. So bear with us as we put through that. I will be teaching the ICANN program through the goal setting sections. I just don't know what aspect. I have to look at my goal setting structure for the next 3 weeks, and I will implement the ICANN in one of those calls.
Oh.
It'll probably be the second call, because the first call, which will be next week, I want to really focus on review of last year and lay the foundation so people can get to work on goal setting. And then when we come back that second week, so I would suggest the 10th of December, we'll start doing training on that. And then January 1st is when we want to kick off. But the starter kits, my projected date for starter kits are going to be in mid-December, so you can start purchasing those. And,
yay!
And we're still shooting for, yeah, isn't that fun? And it's so exciting, and it's and every day, I'm telling you, I love the concept of being able to work on this over an extended period of time, because it's like I go to bed at night thinking about it, coming up with new ideas or new formats, and I wake up in the morning thinking about it. So it's like, oh, my gosh, when is it going to leave my head? It's just like it's always there. But it's neat because it's fine-tuning things, and it's just, you know, once we get it out there, too, I know that people are going to have comments and suggestions and feedback. So for the first few months, I know we're going to get a lot of that. So what we've decided is all the starter kits as we get started in December, all of those will be shipped through manatrain.net. We're going to put it up there for order. I'm not going to go to DupaPack because I know that it's our first set of those. It's to kick everybody off. But probably 3 months from now, we'll develop, fine-tune it, make some adjustments and whatever. And at that point in time, when it gets so huge, then we'll open it up for DupaPack. But I don't want to do it in the first stages because I don't want people to get the program, 6 months from now that was our original draft. I don't want that to happen. I want to make sure that we keep on top of all the fine-tuning as we go along. And so that's what we're going to do. Okay?
Along those lines, we could be volunteer beta testers for you.
Oh, listen to you. Well, you got to have something in your hands in order to do that, and that's
critical.
It's hard without the DVD, which I think is the critical piece. If I had the DVD done, I could send that out to a ton of people. Between that and the chart of how your organization grows, those are two things that really could make a difference for you. There's certain critical pieces. The rest of the documentation is really just supporting what the system is, the system analysis, and the forms that you use as you sign people up, what my life looks like in 12 months, and those kind of forms. That's all available too. But you don't need all of those pieces to just kind of test it a little bit. But beta testing is really going to be something that just when you share it, are you getting people committed? Not so much how the program works, month after month, because that wouldn't be a beta test. Our real beta test will be January, February, March.
Yeah.
But the DVD on being effective, that's one of the reasons I wasn't satisfied with the DVD. I felt that if this ended up in somebody's hands, they wouldn't be totally moved by it. I thought there was a little too many statistics in it and not enough really guts and nuts and bolts about what this was going to create for their life. So I really wanted to go back and do one more look at it, plus some of the technical aspects of it I wasn't happy with, lighting and those kind of things. So,
well, we trust you. It's just we're a little anxious.
I know, but understand you guys, too, that December is probably not it's the neat thing about December is that, this thing is hitting us. It's not December per se. A lot of people are focused on Christmas and Thanksgiving and post-Thanksgiving and all that kind of stuff. But the neat thing is that when you get this at the end of December or whatever and 1st of January, that's when people are really focused on creating a new future for themselves, the New Year's resolutions, all that kind of stuff. So I think the timing of it is going to be awesome when it does hit, because you're going to be able to hit people a ton.
I have to call.
But, yeah.
Okay, we'll be there.
Okay, all right, great. Well, love you guys. Love all of you. And have a great week, and we'll talk next week.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.